afternoon. I'm calling this meeting of the Committee on Taxes to order for March 26, 2024. There is a quorum present. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for March 21st, 2024. Vice Chair Norris, do I have a motion?
Chair Gomez, I move adoption of the March 21st minutes.
Vice Chair Norris has moved adoption of the minutes for March 21st, 2024. Is there any discussion on the motion? Not seeing any, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries, and the minutes for the 21st of March, 2024 are adopted. All right, we have a couple bills up today. First on the agenda is House File 4444. Representative Greenman, welcome back to the committee. I don't know if this will be as fun as last time you were here, but we'll try. We'll do what we can do. So the chair moves that House File 4444, second engrossment, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Greenman, there is also an author's amendment, the A13. Do you want me to move it now?
Yes, please.
Excellent. The chair moves the A13 amendment. Do you want to describe it briefly, or?
Yeah, this the A13, I believe, reflects revisions and clarifications that have come about through. This is the last stop, so we've been having lots of conversations throughout the committee process with both stakeholders and also the committee themselves in both the House and the Senate, and that reflects the language in this bill or in this amendment.
Excellent. Is there any discussion on the A13? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Motion carries, and the bill is in the form the author would like. Representative Greenman, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's nice to be back, members, on this very snowy day. This bill strengthens protections for Minnesota workers, for law-abiding businesses, and for taxpayers by improving Minnesota's ability to fight employer misclassification fraud. For the purposes of this committee, I'm going to focus on the pieces of the legislation under the jurisdiction of tax, specifically the components that include the Department of Revenue, including the enforcement partnership and the data sharing provision. The Department of Labor the Department of Revenue is one of the three primary enforcement agencies that determines worker classification and has enforcement authority when employers misclassify a worker and when those employers avoid the legal requirement to withhold income taxes. Before I turn it over to Commissioner Blissenbach, our Labor Commissioner, to give a little more detail on the policy, I just want to start with why this bill is so necessary. And we've had this conversation in other committees. We had a long conversation in labor, but I think it's important to ground us in Minnesota's strong tradition of providing and protecting economic security, workplace freedom, and social safety net that generations of Minnesotans have come to respect, to rely on, expect, and to help resource. All of that is put at risk when workers are misclassified as independent contractors when they should be employees. When you're an employee, you get minimum wage and overtime pay. You get access to unemployment insurance if you get laid off. You get workers' compensation if you get injured. And now paid time off if you're sick or need time to care. And if you face discrimination on the job, you have laws that protect you. Now there are people who are self-employed, there are freelancers who are in business for themselves, where they negotiate the terms of their contract, the payment, the scope of each job and contract, where they control the performance of the work, where they can make a profit or loss, where they can build a book of business and a customer base. Those folks are independent contractors, and the law treats them as such. But if you're misclassified as an independent contractor while still doing the work of an employee, you're cheated out of all of those legal protections and benefits, plus you pay your boss's side of the payroll taxes. And misclassification, as we've heard from testifiers throughout this process, hurts more than just workers. It also hurts law-abiding businesses that often struggle to compete against companies that artificially reduce their costs by cheating workers and Minnesota taxpayers. And it cheats all of us, the taxpayers and communities that fund and rely on our social safety net are affected. It affects state and local government, state and federal government finances through lower program and tax revenues and also increased reliance on government services. The reality is this is a huge problem. It's been a problem for a while, and it's only growing. 2 weeks ago, we heard the 2024 OLA report on misclassification. They reported that misclassification has increased since the last audit 17 years ago, with 22% of employers in Minnesota having misclassified at least one worker. And by any measure, with the rise of the gig economy and the fissured workplace, the problem is spreading and growing across the economy. It's why that we've been working to tackle this problem. There's an Attorney General's task force that was pulled together, workers, members of the business and freelance community, experts, lawmakers, and our three agencies at the center of the enforcement. We've been working with Commissioner Blissenbach, with Commissioner Marquardt, with Deputy Commissioner Evan Rowe from DEED, and spent the last 7 months listening to workers, listening to businesses, learning from the enforcement agencies about what they can do and what's holding them back. And one thing that is clear is our current policy approach to detecting, to preventing, and to punishing misclassification fraud is not working. It's fractured, it's disjointed, and it doesn't give our agencies or Minnesota workers the tool they need to face this huge problem. We need a whole of government approach. We need a whole of government and a whole of economy approach to this problem. And that's what this legislation does. It provides strengthened tools to the general worker misclassification and specific tools. And for the purposes of this committee, and I'm going to mostly leave this to Commissioner Blissenbach, it includes an intergovernmental misclassification enforcement and education partnership to bring all the enforcement agencies together with a single goal of effectively reducing misclassification fraud through strategic deterrence, enforcement, and education. One of the other pieces that is of jurisdiction to this committee is it allows the Department of Revenue to share information with the Department of Commerce's Commerce Fraud Division to investigate compliance with the workers the worker compensation provisions. Misclassification puts all of those benefits and the social safety net at risk, and it is really critical that we are taking the entire whole of government approach to effectively combating this problem. So with that, Madam Chair, I think that there's many testifiers.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that overview, Representative Greenman. So we are going to move to testifiers right now. First up, Commissioner Nicole Blissenbach. Welcome to the committee. Thanks so much for being with us. Please just state your name as you get started with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Blissenbach. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4444, the bill addressing employer misclassification fraud. Misclassification fraud has a significant impact on employees, law-abiding employers, taxpayers, and social safety net programs. Currently, the law addresses misclassification fraud in a very piecemeal approach and does not set government up to successfully address the problem or prevent the problem from growing further. This legislation specifically addresses deficiencies in the laws meant to address general misclassification and misclassification in the construction industry. Many of the changes outlined in the legislation are direct responses to challenges that the Department of Labor and Industry has experienced in enforcing the current law. The legislation provides more clarity, which will promote compliance and allow investigations to be more impactful. It streamlines and expands enforcement authority, and the legislation strengthens the consequences for employers who violate the law. Relevant to this committee, the legislation also establishes a misclassification education and enforcement partnership. This partnership is made up of DLI, DEED, Revenue, Commerce, and the Attorney General's Office. And that partnership will ensure an effective and efficient whole of government approach to misclassification. I thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill, and I will remain around if there are any questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Blissenbach. Next up, we have Joanna Bears. While Ms. Bears is coming up, just so everybody knows, we do have Ms. Sabas has put together a bunch of materials for us. We have the OLA study on worker misclassification in a little folder that's separate from the bill brief and the fiscal note and the bill language. There is a lengthy fiscal note, so just there's a lot of materials here. All right, Ms. Bears, welcome back.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We just want to say we appreciate the author and our colleagues, especially Commissioner Blissenbach, who have been working on this misclassification bill. Misclassification of employees provides inequities among employers and industries, and this bill will help level that playing field. We support the efforts this bill and the ongoing continued partnership this bill creates to discuss issues related to the employee misclassification and public outreach. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bears. Next up on the list of folks who signed up ahead of time is Octavio Chung Bustamante. Thanks so much for being here. Please just say your name for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Octavio Chung Bustamante. So thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee, for the record. Once again, my name is Octavio Chung Bustamante. I work as an organizer for LAUNA, Labor's International Union in North America. We represent 14,000 proud members and women who build and maintain our state. I'm here to speak in support of HF 4444. Misclassification is widespread in the construction industry. According to a 2021 Midwest EPI report, about 30,100 Minnesota construction workers are misclassified or are paid off the books. We have uncovered evidence of widespread misclassification of stone veneer installers by a multi-billion dollar stone manufacturing and installation corporation. We have also found cases of misclassification on public projects and private. Misclassification is widespread in the construction because there are too many incentives to cheat. Contractors that try to and want to play by the rules are considered undercut, and I can give example of those. Usually the only people that get cut and pay the price for cheating are at the bottom of the supply chain. I also want to say that I love what I do. I love to talk to workers, but the stories that I hear are sad to say the least. A lot of workers, especially immigrant workers, get misclassified in construction. Some of the workers that I talk to tell me that a lot of times they are told by their employer that they should be an independent contractor. And a lot of times, workers don't know what it means to be an independent contractor. In addition to be unable to receive pay in that setup or overtime, what also ends up happening is that some of the workers end up not paying taxes and end up misclassifying their own workers that work under them. These workers also don't get paid overtime then. You see, it is a chain of bad work practices that are usually created by the main contractor or by the first layer subcontractor. At the same time, a lot of developers are well aware of these bad work practices, but they know that by hiring contractors that misclassify workers, that they can save a few bucks. HF 4444 takes important steps to close accountability gaps and ensure a shared commitment to prevent worker misclassification across the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Bustamante. Thanks for being with us today. Finally, Jesse Madison. Welcome to the committee. Please just say your name as you get started with your testimony. Appreciate you being here.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jesse Madison. I am the owner of Purple Tally Productions out of Bloomington, Minnesota. I'm here today in support of HF number 4444. Since 2014, my company has worked to provide payroll, staffing, production expertise in the live sports, entertainment, live streaming, and corporate production industries. My involvement in this specific issue began long before I owned a company. I myself was a 1099 freelance broadcast technician working here in town, beginning about 1996. Back then, everything was 1099, no matter if you liked it or not, that's just how it was. Thankfully, our local workers grouped together and voted in favor of union representation in 2009. So now anytime you watch Twins Wild Timberwolves, you're watching union-made television, and that's what helped change the work from 1099 to W-2. When it comes to how this issue currently affects my company, last year alone we faced a staggering loss of $105,000. This is not just a random number, it's real, and it's a testament to the consequences of inadequate enforcement of labor laws. This loss was compounded by the actions of a former client, Joshua Giles Ministries, and their refusal to settle their invoices, further exacerbated by the engagement of misclassified workers through a company called American Horse Labor of Lakeville, Minnesota. These actions not only undermine the integrity of our industry, but they also embolden others to flout this law with impunity. Additionally, if someone gets hurt on a 1099 show, it's not the company's problem, it's the workers. And I'm sure you've all sat through and heard countless testimony of the terrible outcomes of these kind of situations. We pay tens of thousands of dollars per year for workers' compensation policies because we're a responsible employer. We get punished for it when irresponsible employers are allowed to enrich themselves by ignoring these laws with zero consequences for doing so. We fought over this same issue on shows like the Summer X Games at U.S. Bank Stadium a few years back. Even the recent World Cup Cross Country Skiing Championship held in Minneapolis, that was just a few weeks ago. In that case, it was the same company covering both of those shows, Echo Entertainment out of Los Angeles, California. They bring in out-of-state 1099 workers and cover a major portion of the labor for these shows. It's not just them. There's dozens of other out-of-state and local production companies who continue to use misclassified uninsured workers for events taking place at University of Minnesota, XL Energy Center, and Target Field all year round. In summary, I'm not here to complain and hope someone else fixes it. I've got a documented history of working with lawmakers and labor leaders to help solve these issues. And I've also sat through a lot of these committee meetings now, and I've heard arguments for and against. What I hear from opposition is that they're afraid of the unintended consequences that might happen. I'm here, along with my fellow testifiers, to talk about the consequences that have happened. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Madison. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on this bill before we move to member discussion? I'm not seeing any. So moving now to member discussion on House File 4444. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could you remind me what the motion in front of us is? Where are we moving the bill to?
Yeah, absolutely. So I moved that we re-refer House File 4444, the second engrossment as amended, to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Greenman, there's an amendment. We heard this in state government finance, but with your A13 amendment, can you share with us a little bit more detail about subdivision 5 of that amendment, lines 1.19 to 1.12?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick. This came out of a conversation that we had actually in Judiciary, the partnership, and we haven't gotten into the conversation about the partnership, but is essentially a coordinating effort to bring together the organizations that already have enforcement authority, and that's why those four plus the Attorney General's office are listed. This was a an effort to clarify that the data practices provisions that each of those individual agencies already have. The Data Practices Act applies to those agencies, so when they come together to meet, those same Data Practices Act provisions apply.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at 13D, I understand it deals more with open meeting laws more than data practices. Is that correct, or am I not looking at it correctly?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick. I am not a Chapter 13 expert. The conversation we had in Judiciary included both of those things. I think the same piece, it is very intentional that what we're not trying to do is create another government entity. What we're trying to do is respond to what the OLA report has now told us twice, which is the agencies aren't talking to each other, they're not sharing data, they're not coordinating, people don't know where to go. A lot of the conversation is about investigations and enforcement actions, which have their own set of protections, and so that is why what we are trying to do here is ensure that the agencies are coming together, they have a set of goals that they're meeting, but continue to hold the status that the agencies have on their own because the partnership is not sort of creating a new government entity.
Representative Cosgrove.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, I appreciate your response and clarifying for me and the intent that you're, if I heard you correctly, that we're not trying to create another government agency. Madam Chair, I think this goes back into the realm of the jurisdiction of the State Gov Finance and Policy Committee. This is new language that was not heard in that committee. I would move to re-refer it to the State Gov Finance and Policy Committee and request the roll call.
All right. There being a motion, I'm going to let Representative Greenman respond to that, and then we'll take the vote on your motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. We had this conversation both in StateGov and in Judiciary. So, members, I'd ask that you vote no on the motion. This bill has been through now four committees, and we've had robust discussion at each of them.
So Representative Kosnick has moved that House File 4444, the second engrossment as amended, be re-referred to the State Government Policy and Finance Committee. Is that what it's called?
Close.
The State Gov Committee.
Finance and Policy.
As it's known. So the clerk will take the roll on the motion. The chair votes no.
Chair Gomez, no. Vice Chair Norris.
No.
Vice Chair Norris, no. Lead Davids.
Yes.
Lead Davids, aye. Representative Agbaje, excused. Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson, aye. Representative Brand?
Brand, no.
Brand, no. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, no.
Elkins, no. Representative Howard?
No.
Howard, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Lee?
Rep. Lee votes no.
Lee, no. Representative Lislegarde?
No.
Lislegarde, no. Representative Olson B?
Yes.
Olson B, aye. Representative Olson L?
No.
Representative Olson L, aye. Nay. Excuse me. Nay. Representative Pinto?
No.
Representative Pinto, no. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Smith?
No.
Smith, no. Representative Swidzinski?
Aye.
Swidzinski, aye. Representative Wiener?
Aye.
Representative Wiener, aye. Representative Witte?
Aye.
Witte, aye. Representative Joachim?
Joachim, no.
Joachim, no. Madam Chair, there being 9 ayes and 11 nays and 1 member excused.
There being 9 ayes and 11 nays and 1 excused, the motion does not pass. And the bill is not referred to the committee that I'm now informed is called the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. No offense to our local government partners for their omission. All right, so back to member discussion. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in general, you know, this is it's good that we clarify and that people are classified correctly. I think that that's a good thing. And I am on the audit commission. It wasn't very clear who was doing it. It just so I think there is a lot of research, and maybe it is heavy within construction. But I think we need to really think about why is it happening. And so an employer can maybe save 10%, okay, on the FICA and the workers' comp and the insurance. But it's a bigger reason than that. And the gig economy, of course, is growing, and I think it's going to continue to grow. But it's more than just saving a 10% on taxes, employer share of the taxes. I think as we continue to have more complicated and detailed labor laws and everything else, there's more of an incentive for employers to hire, and not even misclassified, but to hire workers that are correctly classified as independent contractors, like in the gentleman's business competition that he brought up here. And so I hope that we look at that too, and I know it would be a separate thing, but we're just going to continue to have this issue, you know, until we make it easier on employers to do the right thing. Does that make sense? So I would just encourage that. I was going to bring up the Uber thing too quickly. It's not unrelated, but ironically that's an effort to classify as employees people who are not employees, because there are attempts to get them under the minimum wage laws potentially. So I just wanted to bring that up quickly. That's all I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concerns with this, especially out in our area, is the organic growth of business. And we see this on a regular basis where you start a small business, and it's tough to, kind of to the other representative's point, keep on top of all the paperwork. Mm-hmm. It's really challenging for entrepreneurs and startups to be able to maintain all of the laws and regulations, and we've overcomplicated this, I believe. And then the other thing we see is with the organic growth of business. If you are starting your business and say it's just a one-person shop for a long time, but then you start to grow and you start to expand, those next steps can be really challenging for any small business, even if you have, you know, just a small number. And every time you add more complication, more paperwork, more restrictions onto these businesses, it stifles that growth. You know, and out in especially rural Minnesota, well, not just rural Minnesota, but any business, we want those small businesses to grow and expand, but every time we put more regulation on them, it causes those problems. And I understand if there's other, one of the testifiers had brought up in some of the construction industries, things like that, or special events, but I think then what we should do is focus on those issues rather than a blanket legislation to take care of an issue when we could take care of that issue specifically with those particular businesses or industries, because what this is going to do is hamper more business, more small business out in my area, out in greater Minnesota, and I don't want to see that. I think we can do better without adding legislation. Thank you.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you both for your comments. We need to take a whole of economy approach because this is a whole of economy problem. We've been working on the issue of misclassification of construction workers for 17 years, and it's getting worse, and it's spreading. And so I think that when we think about the tools we have, what this bill does is for general misclassification, and we didn't go into the rest of the bill, it just strengthens the enforcement tools and the penalties, because what we're seeing now is right now it's probably more than 10%, but we've had testimony of folks saying they can't pencil it out because it's not just avoiding paying into the UI trust fund and minimum wage and overtime. It's also not having workers' comp. And so it becomes an issue of competitivity. And we want to make sure that our businesses who are doing the right thing, that people who are employing workers and providing all of the protections, many of these that have been in law for the last 80 or more years, that those workers have the benefit. And I will say that should be across the state. Workers who are getting minimum wage and unemployment insurance if they're laid off are putting that back into the local economy. We saw how important unemployment insurance was to our whole economy, our regional economies during the pandemic. People who get hurt on the job, and we heard lots of testimony from construction workers who got hurt, and then they went to the hospital and realized that they'd been misclassified, they didn't have workers' comp, and it's uncompensated care that taxpayers are paying for. So this is being paid for in other ways, oftentimes by the taxpayer or by the businesses who are following the rules, and in sometimes by workers. And so I just say that I think that this bill does takes a measured approach and also responds to both now two sets of OLA reports that really tell us we need to take a different and stronger approach.
Thank you. Up next on the list, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. You know, I have a few questions, and I apologize because, you know, this bill has been through other committees, but I haven't had, you know, the opportunity to see it before. So first, just generally, my understanding was that this applied to construction workers in that industry only. Is that accurate?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Robbins. No, it does three things. One is it affects the construction worker statute, 1.18.723. It also affects, so that is a big piece of legislation. It strengthens enforcement of the general misclassification statute. It does not change the test for the general misclassification statute, but it strengthens enforcement. It adds penalties. It currently contains no penalties for violating it. And then it includes this partnership, which is the four agencies plus the Attorney General's office in their authority to address it more broadly.
Thank you.
Representative Robbins?
Sorry, Madam Chair.
It's all good.
Thank you. Very helpful. So that explains a lot, so that's good. But I do have questions about the Section 8 area where it is changing the test of a construction employee, which is just relevant to the construction, is my understanding.
Representative Greenman.
That's correct.
Okay. So if you wouldn't mind, and you know, obviously, if you don't know, I'm happy to have, you know, talk to staff or whoever, but I'm finding it concerning that sole proprietors are now going to be part of this. And my understanding, which is a little bit dated, but is that sole proprietors were not considered involved in this. So why is that added?
Representative Greenman, and if we need to call the commissioner back up, or I don't.
Thank you, Madam.
Or there's somebody else.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. I've been eyeing the commissioner because now we're into the nitty gritty.
Commissioner Blissenbach, if you want to have anything to add to the conversation, please feel free. Commissioner Blissenbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Robbins. So I think if I'm understanding your question correctly, I know that there were some changes related to the contractor registration system related to sole proprietors, but I'm waiting to hear from my phone-a-friend to see if there's something else you're specifically referring to.
Representative Robbins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, it's in lines 7.11. And then everything seems to follow from that. The definition of persons is amended to include sole proprietors. So then ongoing, sole proprietors are sort of absorbed into this whole thing.
Commissioner Blissenbach.
Chair and Representative Robbins. So, yes, that is, they're bringing it, we're bringing that into the definition of person, which is then subject to the test. And really the purpose of the test in trying to make more clear for folks who need to make sure they're meeting it to be considered an independent contractor is focused on two things. Mm-hmm. One, the legitimacy of the business, and two, the legitimacy of the contracting relationship. So making sure that in order to be a business, you can show the things that would be shown by a business. Like I am filing taxes as a business. I am treating, if I have employees, treating them as employees by paying into UI. And then the second piece of the test is to ensure that there really is a legitimate contracting relationship. So if I am being hired as an independent contractor, which I may be a sole proprietor, we're trying to ensure that that contracting relationship that's being formed is one that is one between a contractor and a subcontractor. So to avoid things like we're seeing, like labor brokers who say they're an entity and are in a subcontractor status, but in fact are employees. They're not controlling the means of the work. Their job is essentially to bring employees, to bring people on to perform the work. They're being paid cash under the table, and it's not a legitimate contracting relationship that you would see between, for example, a general and an electrical subcontractor. So that's really what the focus is despite the way the entity is formed, that there is a legitimate entity and a legitimate contracting relationship.
Thank you. So just for everybody who's following along, the we were talking about what starts the definition of person that starts on 7.11, which you'll see on 7.13, they cross out sole proprietorship and add sole proprietor. So that's sort of a just kind of aligning the definition with how we refer to sole proprietors for the purposes of taxes. But if you look further down on 7.22 to 7.25, there's more substantive changes. So just if everybody else who took a look at it and was like, wait, that's the same thing, there is sort of some more substantive changes. But Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, so that helps a lot. I appreciate that. So, it's probably too late, but what you just said is way more clear than what all this says in how you've outlined what you're trying to get at. And so going forward, I don't know how you can maybe help with that, but some of this, especially when you look at the lines, I mean, I have a million questions here, but starting on like 1017, and just going down in that section, like it talks about work for 30 days, but then it says, oh, but then we're going to start including change orders. And then in all the subsequent language, change orders is in there. Like, and if I can just throw one more thing at you. And then you specifically say payments made in cash do not meet this requirement. And to your point, I thought that's what we were trying to get at. So can you talk about why in 10.25 we call out they can be a business, they can be a sole proprietor, they can meet all these other tests, but then the cash payments don't count? That I find this whole changing of the test extremely confusing.
Okay, so I think there were at least two questions.
Sorry.
We're going to go to the commissioner about the cash payments, but first we're going to go to Representative Greenman. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. And I would just note, like the 30 days, like the pieces of contract, that is based on specific feedback we got from employers and developers who said, here's the way this works in the field. And so again, to the commissioner's point, what we're trying to do is ensure that we're establishing these two things, but we're doing it in a way that actually responds, and this is why it's tailored just to construction, with the way that these contracts are. And so to me, I agree with you when I looked at this, and if we talk about tests, there's currently either 4 or 34 tests, depending on how you look at it, of misclassification across the economy. But when it comes to construction, this feels really foreign. But when you start talking to people who are actually making these contracts, who are hiring people in the field, either independent contractors or workers, this starts to look a lot like their work. And so I think it is that it is helpful, a lot of that stuff we added, in order for it to be responsive and work in the field. So I'll turn it over to the commissioner on the cash piece.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Commissioner Blissenbach.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Robbins, the test, it has changed. It has went from a 9 factor to a 14 factor. But some of the 14 factors are separations of the pieces that were in the 9 factor test. It is very specific to construction industry. So things like requiring a written contract. The test didn't require a written contract before. So when we added the requirement for a written contract that needed to be signed and executed, what we heard from stakeholders was sometimes that signed and executed doesn't happen at the beginning, and what about change orders? So that adding of change orders was in direct response to stakeholder feedback about how construction projects work. You have a written contract, but often those terms have to be changed throughout because things come up throughout the course of a project. As for cash payments, that is what we see when we see misclassification. There are payments that are not tracked. It's cash under the table. And that is how people avoid their obligations to treat people as employees and to keep the records that are required. So what that provision does is it's saying if you have this legitimate contracting relationship between a sub and a contractor and a sub, that there should be invoices and there should be receipts for services that are provided. What there shouldn't be is cash being paid under the table.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm not going to belabor it. I just feel like this expansive test is crazy complicated. And to Representative Wiener's point, I mean, the businesses in my district, maybe at big construction sites or something, it's different. But if you're a sole proprietor, like one of my neighbors has his own business, and one of the lingos that was added in here was improving services. He does, you know, basic remodeling. I just feel like this is going to harm young guy, new family, trying to start building his own business. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how he's going to fit or how this is going to help him. And if he does do work and submits an invoice and tries to be a legitimate business, like I just feel like they're so hamstrung by all of this jargon that is really, I think, not what you're fully getting at. And to the point about the labor vendors that you're talking about, I think there should be maybe something more specific aimed at that than this cover the waterfront that I think is really going to hurt small businesses. So I know it's too late. I know the bill is moving, but I just, this level of the 14-point test, I already thought it was far too complicated before, and I just feel like some of the definitions in here are going to make it really hard for just everyday folks to build a business and make a living for their families, and that's my concern, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Greenman, are you good? I can go to, okay, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for your work on this bill, and I think notably for it being in this committee, for the partnership around the education and enforcement to see our agencies coming together in this way, I think is really great, and kudos to you and to Commissioner Blissenbach and the Department of Revenue and everybody that's been working on this. I think we like to see this, right, the efficiencies. But I think more so, thank you for your work on making sure that we're protecting workers. I think to kind of the other point, you know, we passed a lot of good laws, and we want them to impact people. We want workers to get the benefits that they earn every day. And, you know, to the flip side, we don't want to exempt people. We don't want to figure out how more people can skirt the system. The goal is to make sure that workers have the protections that they earn every day and that they deserve. And so I love to see both how our agencies are coming together to do this, but more broadly, thank you for your work on making sure the workers get the benefits that they need and deserve.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Wiener. Did you want to be back on the list? You look a little okay. Oh well, I mean, I wasn't invited. No, I'm just kidding. Representative Wiener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the point, there was a cost of classification. I'm sorry, but there's also a cost to regulation and overregulation. Now, just a quick search, it said businesses 50 employees or less cost of doing business is approximately almost $12,000 per employee, and regulation can eat up almost 20% of what they do. So this is my concern when we have more regulation onto small businesses, particularly. What is the cause and effect? They are already carrying enough burden per employee, and then more regulation just stifles that growth, and that's really what I wanted to point out. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Representative Davids for closing comments. I just wanted to just say that, you know, Representative Greenman referred to the, you know, this being their 17 years of work maybe on some of the construction aspects of this, and I know that there are people in the room who've been working on this issue for a very long time, and you know, this is complex work, as we can tell from the conversation that we just had, but it is worthy. It's worth our time. It's worth really digging in to ensure that we have an economy that is fair for working people. Because what we see, and you know, we talk about this trend a lot in our committee here, is that increasingly it's just harder and harder for working people to make a way for themselves. And so, you know, us being here in this space and spending, you know, I know that this has been a long bill. It has a, you know, there have been a couple of OLA reports on this, as Representative Greenman was saying, and you know, this is this is it is the work of the legislature in so many ways, and so I just appreciate all of the voices that have come to the table around this, the long effort. I appreciate the people who've come today, the working people who are here in our committee today, sharing with us the challenges that this creates for them, and us thinking about the competitive disadvantage that this puts certain businesses at, who don't engage in some of these practices that are not, you know, not legal, and the cost to our public system of allowing these practices to continue. So just wanted to say those couple things, and again, just to extend my gratitude to the people who've been working on this for a very long time, and to Representative Greenman for stepping up to lead it this session. And with that, we'll go to Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We got a question for House Research. First of all, with the amendment lines 1.19, it'd be the A13 amendment down through 1.22 for this new mega agency that's going to intimidate and bully people. Did we just let them out of the open meeting law?
Mr. Klayman.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids. So the A13 amendment, so lines 1.19 to 1.22. The first sentence there on 1.19 to 1.20 specifically states that the proposed partnership is not a separate agency and would not be subject to Chapter 13D, which is the open meetings law chapter.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that, Mr. Klayman. I don't know why in the world we would do that. They said we're not creating another agency. Well, we got a multi-agency we're creating called the Intergovernmental Misclassification Enforcement Education Partnership. Let's say I'm trying to recruit somebody to come work in Minnesota, start a business in Minnesota, and they say, what in the world is that? And those are the guys that are going to get you no matter what you do. Somebody said it's harder for workers. Well, I'll tell you what, it's a lot harder for businesses to make it these days, too, and this just makes it worse. This is a horrible bill. I am horrified, mortified, and terrified by the provisions in this bill. The agencies can already do everything that this bill says they can do. You can already do it. Just do your job. You can already do it. What do we need this for? So we're going to have Big Brother called Dolly D, Department of Revenue, Commerce, and Attorney General's Office, that these small business entrepreneurs have to go up against. There's only one person in this room, I think, that could take them all on and win, and that'd be me. I can't imagine a 25-year-old starting a business have to go up before this mega agency that would be intimidating and bullying just by its very nature. So worker protection, there's no more worker protection than the workers already have. So this bill, I'm kind of surprised the Chamber and NFIB and Business Partnership weren't down here, unless, you know, it's not going anywhere in the Senate, and I don't know that, and I can't refer to that. But everything that you're trying to do here, you can already do. But it just puts the salt on the wound that they don't have to apply or abide by the open meeting law. So much for transparency. This is disgusting that you could take a business owner and you could put them before this mega agency and they don't have to abide by the open meeting law. That is just wrong at so many levels. And maybe I get a little touchy on this because I live 10 miles from the state of Iowa where they have freedom. They don't have these types of things going after employers all the time. And guess where Fillmore and Houston County employees are going? They're going to Iowa where they have freedom. This is the most anti-freedom bill I think I've ever seen. And I know it's going to pass, but it's just another nail in the coffin of small business. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. For final thoughts, we're going to go back to Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. When I think about freedom, I think about being able to work and getting minimum wage and overtime pay, and if you get hurt on the job, you should be able to afford and be compensated. When you get laid off, you should have access to unemployment insurance, not just for you, but for your families, for your communities. And when I think about this bill and I think about what's happened in our economy in the last 30 years, we have made over time a conscious decision that we don't want people to be deprived of their wages that they earn, that we don't want people to go bankrupt because they get hurt at work, and we don't want people when they get laid off to starve. And we have built a system where there's a broad base, right? Employers pay into the UI trust fund in order to distribute that cost broadly. We've paid a system that says if you have employees, you gotta have insurance so that folks get hurt, if the folks get hurt on the job. That system relies on people paying in and following the law. But we have, and by not enforcing these laws, and frankly by creating a set of laws that make them almost a bad business practice to comply with, there's currently no penalties for misclassification, provision general misclassification. So if you're a business and you're saying, well, would I rather pay unemployment insurance? Would I rather pay minimum wage? Would I rather? You might not want to do that because your competitor isn't either. But we shouldn't, as government, and we shouldn't, as people in communities, create a system where the incentive is actually to break the law. What we should do is create an incentive that says good businesses should be able to continue doing what they're doing, and those folks who are cheating taxpayers, who are cheating workers out of these benefits, they, in fact, should comply with the law. And what we're trying to do is actually not enforce their way out of it. We're trying to deter the behavior in the first place, because everybody will benefit when everybody is in contributing, and when folks in their communities and workers have what they need. So, Madam Chair, this bill really does hit a lot of different areas, and like many things, it is diffuse and diffracted, and the goal of this bill is to pull that together and say the agencies that are working on misclass come together, share information, talk, use government resources and our government provisions effectively. And I think that this bill does that. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 4444, the second engrossment as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means. And Representative Davids has requested a roll call, so we'll have a roll call. Ms. Sabas, please take the roll.
Chair Gomez.
Gomez votes aye.
Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Norris.
Aye.
Norris, aye. Lead Davids.
No.
Davids, no. Representative Agbaje.
Aye.
Agbaje, aye. Representative Anderson. Excused. Representative Brand.
Aye.
Brand, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Joy.
No.
Joy, no. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, no. Representative Lee.
Lee votes yes.
Lee, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Olson B.
No.
Olson B, no. Representative Olson L.
Aye.
Olson L, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Robbins.
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Smith.
Aye.
Smith, aye. Representative Swidzinski. Representative Swidzinski.
No.
Representative Swidzinski, no. Representative Wiener.
No.
Keeping us.
Wiener, no. Representative Witte.
No.
Witte, no. Representative Joachim.
Yes.
Representative Joachim, yes. Madam Chair, there being 12 ayes, 8 nays.
There being 12 ayes and 8 nays, the motion is adopted and the bill as amended is re-referred to Ways and Means. All right. Next up, Representative Greenman is not going anywhere. We have House File 4572, and I'm going to move that House File 4572 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. Representative Greenman, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this is a bill that is also related to misclassification and related to one of the things that makes it harder for our agencies to work together and to enforce Minnesota's law. This is a bill that simply says that Minnesota will no longer conform to federal section 530 of the IRS code. It's a federal tax provision that provides a permanent safe haven for employers who may have been found to have misclassified an employee as an independent contractor. For folks who are unfamiliar with Section 530, as I was when we started this task force, this is a case where the IRS, the DOR, is making a determination that the employer taxpayer may have classified a worker as an independent contractor who would have been an employee under the IRS classification test. Section 530 relieves that employer of their employment tax obligations and allows the employer to continue to classify that worker as an independent contractor permanently if they have consistently done it and had a reasonable basis for doing so. Reasonable basis becomes the operative piece here. It's liberally construed, and it includes both prior audits and judicial precedent. But more importantly for our purposes, it also includes industry practice or an other reasonable basis for treating a worker as an independent contractor. This isn't just a one-time safe haven from repaying the federal employment tax after misclassifying. It's a permanent cure that allows an employer to continue to misclassify that worker for the purposes of employment tax obligations. And the safe harbor doesn't extend to the worker. It's only a safe harbor for the employment tax issues. I learned about Section 530 as part of our work on the Attorney General's task force. As we discussed in the previous bill, we spent a lot of time learning from both workers, from businesses, talked to the government agencies, and asking the question of what are the things we can do to reduce the barriers and think about how we can better enforce the law. Section 530 came up. There's a few implications for the IRS tax haven, a safe haven. Most of the income tax implications are actually at the federal level, but not by conforming with this safe haven at the state level. It has an impact on the Department of Revenue's ability to track and enforce misclassification fraud, especially in industries where there's an industry practice of misclassifying workers. You can see how conforming with Section 530 may hinder tax auditors' ability to detect and investigate. In areas where the IRS states if an employer is eligible for Section 530 relief, the examiner will basically cease the examination with regard to the occupation. So it basically shuts off those audits. Section 530 can get in the way of efforts, enforcement efforts, and make them more ineffective. It's important to note that Section 530 is not Minnesota law. The provision was adopted by Congress in 1978 as a one-year temporary safe haven, corresponding with changes that were happening at the time to federal employment law. It was then extended for a year. It was extended for another year, and at some point, it was made permanent in the tax overhaul bill. And from what I've heard, it wasn't codified into Minnesota law until 2009, when the provision was incorporated in Minnesota law by way of an unrelated provision that broadened the definition of the Internal Revenue Code in Section 290.01 to include any codified provisions in federal law. And this is uncodified. So we didn't make an intentional policy choice to adopt Section 530 as a safe harbor, but while it wasn't an intentional decision to adopt it, it is, and it was supposed to be temporary, this federal incorporation in Minnesota law has policy impacts on our ability to defer and prevent misclassification. We're taking a whole-of-government approach to this whole-of-economy problem, and by removing Section 530, by uncoupling it with state law, this will help ensure that when DOR is looking at investigations and enforcement of their role in misclassification fraud, that they're not hindered by Section 530. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. So we do have a few testifiers. First up, Ms. Bears, welcome back.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Baird. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'm going to probably reiterate a little bit what Representative Greenman has already said, but I think it's important to understand what Section 530 is and what it's not. Section 530 of the Revenue Act of 1978, which Minnesota has conformed to, is a relief provision for employers who incorrectly treat workers as contractors if they meet certain requirements, such as consistently reporting and treating the employees as if they were contractors and following industry practice, just to name a couple. Section 530 relief does not determine a worker to be an independent contractor, nor does it change the status of a worker. It only provides relief from federal employment tax liabilities and state income tax withholding requirements. The worker can still be determined to be an employee through other means. And while this bill decouples Minnesota from federal relief, meaning Minnesota would no longer make its own determination, we would follow the department would still follow the determination made by the IRS if they were to make that determination prior to our review of the withholding. The administration supports the discussion on how to ensure workers are properly classified and what Representative Freeman is doing with the bill today. The Section 550 relief allows employers to continue incorrectly treating employees as independent contractors by shifting the responsibility of making tax payments from the employer to the employee. This creates inequities between employers and industries that are properly classifying employees. The bill will help ensure that workers can meet their tax responsibilities and aren't fairly burdened by more complicated filing requirements. Thank you. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bears. Next up, I have Beth Cadoon. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Cadoon. Please just introduce yourself as you're getting started with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. And my name is Beth Cadoon, and I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. There's also was a joint letter in your packet regarding the previous bill that I would refer you to, as it states a key point, which is we share the goal of preventing misclassification and believe repeat or willful misclassification should be investigated and punished because it cheats workers and honest employers alike. At the same time, our members do not want more complex regulation in an area where clear and consistent guidance from regulators is often lacking. As this recent legislative audit report was mentioned, it also found, and I want to just highlight a few of those findings, that determining a worker's proper status can be challenging due to the various tests within agencies and the subjective nature of the criteria. There is not a specific threshold to distinguish an employee from an independent contractor. And it is possible, and this is from the OLA, that employers or agency might classify the same worker differently simply because they weighted the various factors differently. The OLA also found that classification tests are similar, but they are not the same between the agencies, which means a worker could be classified as an employee for one state program and classified as another for another program. Because of that challenge and confusion for compliance, we are opposed to this bill as it removes a long-standing and important safe harbor provided both federally and followed at the state level for businesses that have acted reasonably and in good faith regarding their classification of workers. The safe harbor protects against that retroactive employment tax-related assessments, but as was mentioned, it does not determine the worker's classification status. Under Section 530, businesses must meet, and I just think it's important to mention some of these factors. The criteria they have to meet is reporting consistency. They need to be filing tax forms for that worker. They also have to meet substantive consistency, which means they must consistently treat workers as independent contractors. You can't flip between being an employee and an independent contractor. And it also has to be based on a reasonable basis. And there's criteria that's been laid out for what determines a reasonable basis that a taxpayer must reasonably rely on. It has to be judicial precedent or a past audit of that taxpayer on that same issue or a longstanding recognized industry practice. The OLA report acknowledges that some employers may generally mistakenly misclassify employees. In such instances, we believe that education and corrective actions are more appropriate and would recommend keeping the safe harbor for businesses that have acted reasonably and in good faith. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cadoon. Finally, John Housladen. Welcome to the committee. Sorry if I mispronounced your name. Please say your name as you get started with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am John Housladen, President of the Minnesota Trucking Association, and I am here to testify in opposition to House File 4572. A key component of personal and business success is consistency, the ability to predict future opportunities and risks based on precedent allows individuals and businesses to make informed decisions. Now, Section 530 of the IRS provides such consistency.
It provides a safe harbor, and this is part of the confusion, I think, today, to assume that once the IRS has ruled that a type of worker is an independent contractor, the business may assume that future workers will continue to be classified as such if there are no material changes in business practices. So think about this. Such confidence encourages businesses to grow and to offer continued opportunities to independent contractors and employees alike. House File 4572 strikes down this concept of precedence, creating great uncertainty and confusion. So I work for trucking companies. Trucking companies could face the very real prospect of having a worker designated as an independent contractor for the purposes of federal income tax purposes and as an employee for the purposes of Minnesota income tax. It would be an administrative nightmare. Now imagine you're an administrative law judge trying to sort through all these different things with this level of confusion. And I guess I would respectfully disagree with what has been said earlier. The current safe harbor provision does not protect bad faith actions where there is no reasonable basis for employment classification. If there's a problem with bad faith misclassification, then we believe deal with that, but don't punish those who have acted in good faith. The safe harbor is being presented as something that protects someone who's done something wrong and then they can continue to do it. No. What this says is that the business has gone through a rigorous examination by other federal entities and have made a determination based on all the factors that their qualified staff take into account that they are indeed an independent contractor. And with that stamp of gone through that evaluation, they can make some business decisions going forward. So we think striking down 530 safe harbor provision will also create yet another critical area where Minnesota will not be in conformity with federal regulations. As interstate trucking businesses, trucking companies rely on consistency across all jurisdictions. And such inconsistency will, without a doubt, increase paperwork, administrative costs, the risk of inadvertent errors, and potential litigation. So in closing, our industry provides thousands of employee driver openings and independent business opportunities. And as industry, we support the right of workers to choose the path that makes sense for them. Now, many choose employee driver options. Some choose independence. They can make these choices when the law and the rules are stable, when the rules are predictable. Trucking is a proud industry. We are proud to deliver the goods our small towns and big cities need every day. We're proud to provide good-paying jobs and great opportunities for entrepreneurs to go after the American dream. An attack on the rights of workers to choose the path that is best for them, employment or independence, like this one, threaten the stability of a trucking industry that is vital to our economy, the supply chain, and things we use every day. So we urge you to preserve that stability and the safe harbor provision and vote no on House File 4572. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Houseladen. Is there anybody else present who wishes to testify on House File 4572? Not seeing any, we will move to member discussion. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman, we just heard some pretty compelling testimony of the difficulties for an industry such as trucking and maybe other related industries that do interstate commerce and having to manage the classification of their independent contractors. Would you be open to an exemption that would make it easier for such industries if you still feel compelled to pursue this bill? Wouldn't that make sense?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick. I think generally when we have a rule and we start carving it up, it becomes more confusing and harder to enforce. One of the things I will say, and I appreciate the testimony we heard about tests, because I think that what Ms. Cadoon said is accurate. We don't have one test. We have four tests. And for workers' comp, we have like 30. And so I think that there is a conversation that I'm hoping we can have about, do we need a simpler test? Do we need one test? In construction, they have a presumption of employment. Those are all things that would actually add both certainty and also just make it much easier. But we have not taken that approach either at the state or federal level. So what we're doing here and what we're saying is this doesn't change the designation, and I think I heard them say you'd have a different designation as an employee versus an independent contractor. It is very clear that what Section 530 does not actually change the classification of somebody at the federal level. What it does say is that you are now forgiven, you have a safe haven moving forward from paying those employment taxes. It doesn't change the obligations on that worker who is an employee either. And so I think it's really critical. Is all this does, all Section 530 does, is say for an employer who has been designated and going through all of those requirements, of which longstanding industry practice, and I was looking at some of the case law, it doesn't actually have to be that longstanding. And the idea that we're going to say because there's people are misclassifying across your industry is a reason that you should get a safe harbor doesn't feel like the right policy choice for us here in Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's unfortunate that we are adding the whole of government to run businesses out of the state. The whole of government with these two bills is pushing employers, job creators, to Iowa, to North Dakota, South Dakota, anywhere else but Minnesota. There is a reason we have one of the worst business tax and environment regulatory climates, and these bills add to that bad environment for business in Minnesota. We're looking at a deficit down the road because despite the Democrats' ability to continue to raise taxes and spend more, we're pushing the job creators and revenue creators out of this state, and it's unfortunate that that's the priority of this majority. I wish you would reconsider.
Is there any further member discussion? Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as we continue to look, this is the first day of tax season this year. We came into this and we wanted to get conformity to the tax code. And now we want to walk away from the federal government and have our own little destination here. And as we continue to do all this mandates and pushings on employers and small business growth that we're hoping to protect the employees in Minnesota, protect them with who? Because as the businesses continue to move across the borders, we're not going to have the jobs here anyway. I think we need to reconsider this bill and really think about what we're doing here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. As you know, we are a state that selectively conforms with the Internal Revenue Code, so it's actually not unusual across our tax code for us to align in certain places and to be decoupled in other places from the IRC. Is there any further member discussion? Internal Revenue Code was what I was referring to, Representative Davids. Yeah.
Please accept my apology.
Of course. Apology accepted. Representative Joachim.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Gomez. And just a quick question, Representative Greenman. Maybe I misunderstood the Department of Revenue's explanation of the bill. There is still a safe harbor here for businesses if they misclassify employees. Is that accurate?
Representative Greenman.
Madam Chair.
Coupling is what I'm saying. Sorry.
Let me try to ask. I think.
Okay. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Representative Joachim. This, we obviously can't change federal tax code, and for the purposes in Minnesota, these are employment taxes are, and I think that what I said and I think what they would say is the actual tax impact is at the federal level. The reason it matters and the reason we should do it is what it means for the Department of Revenue is when we're looking at these areas of high misclassification, areas where we see it expanding, janitorial, construction, you name it, when there's this safe haven, right, that says before you even get there, if these things happen, you may be there might be a safe harbor. It just makes it harder to do strategic enforcement. And again, our goal is to say in the areas where we see high misclassification, we should make sure that we're protecting workers and also those businesses who are actually playing by the rules. Like, we're trying to level the market and level the playing field for those businesses that are providing for their employees and following the law.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for explaining to me that a little bit better. I haven't had a chance either to hear this bill in committee, hear the other bills in committee yet, but I've been watching them, and I think it's very important. And I'd hate to have a slide down the slope saying to our employees, who are just as important as our employers, to the employees that beggars can't be choosers. You just get what you get. And I want to thank you for the bills that you're bringing forward.
All right. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair. First, just a quick comment based on some of the previous discussion. I just want to note that many metrics continue to rank Minnesota as one of the best states in the country for business, in part because of our incredibly high quality of life. And that isn't just conjecture. I'm not just saying it. We see it borne out in the actual numbers, where Minnesota's economy is growing stronger, as evidenced by our last forecast. Just because we say something doesn't make it true. But I have a question, Representative Greenman. I was really surprised as I was hearing your testimony, just in general, that I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. So basically, an entity can make a mistake and basically get out of paying taxes free card, essentially. That's what the current statute says. I don't remember that coming my way when I filed my taxes and made an error a few years ago. Do I understand that correctly?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Howard. Yes, and not just this year, but into the future, sort of as long as that current situation exists, you have a safe harbor from paying employment taxes at the federal level.
Representative Howard.
Just to follow up, whether it's an accident or not, it seems reasonable to me that, just as Minnesotans do, that businesses should follow the law and pay their appropriate taxes. And so I appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Greenman. So I understand that it doesn't change the classification at the federal level at all. But if the safe harbor no longer exists for Minnesota tax purposes, it could have tax implications for the business. So if at the state level we say, well, it was misclassified, even though the Fed doesn't say that, could the same worker have different classifications? And then would the business owe different taxes at the state level? Like, I'm surprised that the fiscal note came back as, we don't know, because it seems like it does have serious tax implications. So I'd like to understand why the fiscal note is sort of just like, we have no idea.
We'll go to Representative Greenman and then Ms. Bears. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. And I'm going to turn it over to the tax experts. What I will say, sort of in learning about this, we're just talking about the employment. So under current law, there are, when we're talking about unemployment insurance, there's a test. When we're talking about taxes, there's a test. When we're talking about workers' compensation, there's a test. Should they all be one test? Yes, I think so. That's not the conversation we're having today. There's lots of folks who I think are not eager to have that conversation. But as long as it exists that we have different tests for different roles, in this case, the IRS test, and it is my understanding, and I'm mostly just trying to impress you with my tax knowledge, that because what we're talking about at the employment level is the federal tax, because we don't have that same tax at the state level, really it impacts how we do our work, but we don't actually have any taxes that we're collecting that are implicated.
Thank you.
Was right.
And we'll go to Ms. Bears and see if Representative Greenman was right.
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins. So the question is regarding why there's an unknown estimate. That's because so we do not have federal employment taxes. We have withholding. And so now the employer would be required to collect their withholding every month or every biweekly and submit it to the Department of Revenue rather than the independent contractor submitting it at the end of the year. So it's unknown whether or not, you know, I think there's a question about whether or not, you know, if the taxes would get paid or wouldn't get paid or how that would be shifting from fiscal year or month by month because it's changing how the taxes are paid, right? So it's either paid at the end of the year or in estimated payments or paid with withholding. I don't know if that helped clarify at all, but that's why it's an unknown cost.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess I was more referring to if the classification is different. In the fiscal note, it says that work-related expenses may be fully deductible as business expenses for contract workers, but limited as itemized deductions for employees. So it could change what the employer owes on their state taxes based on the classification, but yet we don't seem to have tried to calculate how that will affect their state income taxes. Am I understanding that?
Ms. Bears.
Madam Chair, Representative. So I see what you're saying, because you're saying because if you have an employee, you can claim certain employee expenses on your return versus not being able to claim them if they're independent contractors. You know, I'd have to talk to our research folks, but I see where you're going. And you're right, it's not calculated within our estimate, but I do hear the question, and we can get back to you.
We're going to maybe go to Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, the revenue estimate, it shows a positive unknown, which means the department believes that there will be potentially additional general fund revenue, but in an unknown amount. And I believe that is because they do not have, the bill doesn't change like the ability to deduct business expenses or anything like that. Typically, a revenue estimate would estimate a reduction or an increase if the bill was doing that. But this bill is just pertaining to Section 530, and it's not directly changing anyone's liability. It has to do more with the classification. So that's why you don't see any assumptions in the revenue estimate for a potential, you know, the dollar amount for the revenue gain.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, but it does look like it will increase tax receipts from businesses, but we're unsure of the magnitude.
Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, yes, that is correct.
Thank you. So we have two more on the list, and we have one more bill to do. So Representative Kosnick, if we could keep it brief.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think it's important. You know, looking at the legislative auditor, and I'm going to ask Mr. Hosleyden a question if he wants to come up, if that's appropriate. But looking at the legislative auditor's summary report, they say several state agencies undertake activities that involve identifying and correcting worker misclassifications. Several state agencies, not just one. And so I'm curious from your industry perspective, Mr. Hosleyden, can you clarify the differing definitions of independent contractors across different businesses?
Representative Kosnick, if you have something, you're asking Mr. Hosleyden to interpret an OLA report or kind of the difference?
No, I'm just citing that they recognize that there's several agencies that undertake this task, but my question is from a private sector vantage point, what are the different definitions that independent contractors across different business sectors, how does his experience relate to
Mr. Hosleyden, very briefly, please.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Kosnick, actually 2009 we had a very vigorous process where we engage with organized labor agencies and legislators to come up with a unified definition that applies and is exactly the same for deed, for Dolly, so that we don't have inconsistency there. So that does make us unique. And then, frankly, the safe harbor is what wraps it all together so that when we're looking at an analysis, consistent definitions, safe harbor, we can make a clear determination.
Thank you, Mr. Hosleyden. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a question for research here. How many other states have removed themselves from Section 530?
Mr. Klayman.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I don't know the answer to that question. We'd have to go back and do some digging for that.
Okay,
Representative Davids.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And so what we have here is we have the IRS could rule one way. The state basically rules another way. And so here's another attack on business where this is so tremendously confusing. And a junior member just recently said that just because you say something doesn't make it true. Let's just remember when I say something, it is true.
Good reminder to those junior members among us. Any final thoughts for us, Representative Greenman?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for a robust discussion. The last time I was here, we saw slides about the record revenue, much of which was coming in from corporate profit that's being made. We have the lowest unemployment rate in the country right now, and a lot of that has to do with the work that we have done to make this a good place to live, the work we have done to level the playing field to ensure that working families and that the workers of our state and the businesses who are playing by the rules can come here and can invest in our communities and thrive. When folks are not investing in our communities, when they're not paying their fair share, it shifts that burden on to everybody else. Did that on purpose. I figured out how things work in this committee.
Out of respect for you, I defer.
So, Representative Greenman.
Yeah, just in some, this is a simple thing. We were not doing this critical safe haven. We had not been doing in Minnesota law until 2009, and it was intended to be a one-year temporary safe harbor while things transitioned. Like most things, once you create a safe haven, once you create something that people are invested in, it somehow makes its way into permanent law, whether or not it makes sense for businesses and communities. There is lots more conversation on the test question that I'm looking forward to. I hope if folks want to work on that. It is a thing, and if you, to your question, Representative Cosmic, on 24 of the OLA report, the three tests that exist. There's another workers' compensation test that we're being referred to. So there's a lot of work here to do, and I look forward to doing it with you. But this seems like a straightforward thing we can do to take on this problem. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Greenman. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 4572 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill, and it is laid over. We have one final item, which is the vehicle bill. Before we do that, just want to make a quick announcement because I think Vice Chair Norris is going to gavel us out. I don't want to disappoint anybody. I know we were all looking forward to being together tomorrow at this time in this location, but thanks to the generosity of Representative Robbins, we're going to cancel tomorrow's tax committee, and we'll be hearing her bill and a bill from Representative Sensenmura next Tuesday. So I obviously wanted us all to be here together tomorrow, but Representative Robbins is sick of you and wants everybody to go and have a wonderful Easter break. No. Thank you. And with that, I'll hand it over to Vice Chair.
All right, as Chair Gomez heads up to the testifier table, I will move, or Chair Gomez moves that House File 5002 be re-referred to the General Register. Chair Gomez, welcome to your committee, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So in front of you is House File 5002. What we did is we took the scintillating policy and technical bill from the department and we removed all of the interesting items from it. So we have a slimmed down version of that in front of us, which will serve as a vehicle bill. So we'll be passing this to the floor. And that's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Lee David.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to this bill, I am in full support of it. In fact, I ran on this one, actually. But just a suggestion, just from experience, being a senior member. I would suggest maybe about four or five more vehicles, because I really got gummed up in 1999 because I didn't know what a vehicle bill was. And I learned the hard way. So I totally support this, maybe a couple more. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lee Davids. Any further member discussion? Anything further, Chair Gomez?
Nope. Sounds like I need to pass a couple more vehicles, so get ready for the future.
All right. With that, Chair Gomez renews her motion that House File 5002 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion is adopted, and the bill is re-referred to the General Register. As Chair Gomez mentioned, we will not be meeting tomorrow. We'll be back next Tuesday. And with that, we are adjourned.